So then you go to 522-0, which talks about disposal of any real property within the last 10 years. And you'd be surprised, especially around the border cities, where it's generally the practice, at least south of the border, and which has migrated over to north of the border, which is the United States, the practice of transferring property to relatives or receiving property from relatives, family members, to be held in their name until the parent passes away, or maybe the parent transferring their home to their children because they don't want to deal with an instrument later on in life upon their death. And so you're going to run into all these issues of transfers. And so you want to make sure that you do the right property searches and real estate searches, and you ask the right questions about these transfers because, you know, you ask the question, do you own any property? And if they're living at home and they've transferred to their children, but it's still their property, they say no. But then you just have to follow up with the right questions and dig a little bit more. And so you have to run these inter-office traps. I've talked about this at other conferences, and again, that's another topic for another day, and how to run those traps, and I'm sure you have your own traps set up. But eventually, you know, the debtor starts in your office, runs through several paralegals, and then comes back to you. And you'll see you're going to start getting different responses to the same question been posed over and over and over again. And hopefully you get, once you've done your homework and your research, you'll find out the truth about it. Then you run through 522P, right, where you look at the 1,215-day look-back period. And this kind of goes hand-in-hand with O, whether or not the debtor has actually acquired any property the last 1,215 days prior to filing, because then you could be subject to that statutory cap of $160,375 currently, which can be modified in the code. And probably the rarest one is a 522Q, where you want to ask the question whether the debtor has been convicted of any kind of felony or owes any debts described in the statute dealing with stocks and things of that nature. And that's generally where I start. Then you go through your exemptions and you figure out, you know, if you're going to go with the Texas exemptions, how much equity the debtor has, or whether it would benefit the debtor to go back to use federal exemptions, especially if they have non-exempt assets, extra vehicles they may want to cover with a D5 wildcard, things of that nature that you can't use utilizing the Texas exemptions. And, of course, you want to ask the important question, if they do own a home, whether they intend to sell it, when they expect to sell it, or whether it's currently being marketed or what's, you know, recently sold. So they may say, well, yeah, it's on the market right now. I don't want to keep it. So then you want to think about what your, you know, how you want to proceed going forward, whether you want to go, you know, whether they can hang on to that house till you finish bankruptcy, or whether they want to go into a 13 and deal with that issue, or they're going to seek another homestead and transfer that money to another homestead. So you've got to go through those traps, if you will.
If I may, I'm going to follow up with some other questions, but I'll interject. Forgive the lack of humility.
I didn't know this was going to be an interview.
Oh, I'm not done yet. I'm just getting started. I actually had two cases that sort of deal with some of the issues that you want. The first case dealt with 522-0, and what was remarkable about that case, you know, it's a 10-year look back. The debtor in that case, what he had done was he had owned property in Missouri, and then he inherited a home in Texas, and he encumbered the home in Missouri because he knew that there was an unlimited homestead exemption for purposes of acquiring the property in Texas. And a very good trustee, 9 years and 9 months look back, argued that said, well, that was fraudulent, and 522-0 applied. Oh, I should mention the debtor was a lawyer. And so that was informative to me, and I looked to see what badges of fraud applied. Unfortunately, from my perspective, what happened was that one of the things I factored in my analysis, making the finding that 522-0 applied, was that the lawyer understood the distinction between homestead exemptions in Missouri and in Texas because, oh, he was licensed in both states. And the circuit told me I should have not done that, that I had applied a standard that didn't apply. So went all the way back. We tried again. It was remanded back to me. Went through. I said, I'll be your Huckleberry. So I wrote an opinion and took that out. And it went all the way back up to the Fifth Circuit. And remarkably, they affirmed me that time. So I felt completely vindicated. The second thing on the securities fraud, I had a case also when I presided here in Austin called Bounds. And this is where, to Judge Rodriguez's point, it's really critical. The debtor filed that case, and the whole concern of the debtor was, I want to protect my homestead. And I don't want to throw any stones at the lawyer in that case, but the lawyer in that case was aware of the 522Q exception, but said, I don't know that it'll be implicated in this case because I don't think that you have the requisite threshold of income or property that it'll apply. Well, the statute doesn't read that way. And long story short, I made the finding that it did. They ultimately settled that case, and there was a decent return in Townsquare creditors as a result of that.